If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, host of The Big Story, Canada's longest-running daily news podcast. For 6 years now, we've been telling one story a day, every one of them about something that matters to Canadians. This spring, though, we're going deeper. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt, the inside story of Ontario's Greenbelt scandal. From political games to stag and doe parties, endangered species, RCMP investigations, and Las Vegas massages, you will hear the full story straight from the people who broke it. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt. New episodes every Monday starting April 22nd, and you can get them all by following The Big Story wherever you get your podcasts.
Find your frequency.
Hey, I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg, and this is Side Note,
a podcast where every episode we tell stories about and then debate a controversial topic.
And then we research and splice in all the mind-blowing shiznit throughout so you are entertained while simultaneously learning.
Today we are talking about tidying up, inspired by Marie Kondo and her book, as well as her new Netflix series by the same name. We'll start it with some stories where Greg explains a disastrous situation while he was teaching kids in England. And then I'm going to tell a pretty nasty story about when we forgot to clean up. Then, of course, we're going to debate at the end of the podcast about whether or not tidying up is a magical, important experience to be part of your life, or if it's even worth it at all.
Today's Side Notes will be presented by myself, Greg, Mitch, and Rachel.
Hey friends, let's get into it.
Before we start today's podcast, we have some exciting news, which is we have a new sponsor. So today's episode is sponsored by Cold Turkey, not the food, but an app that helps you boost your productivity and reclaim your free time by blocking websites, games, and applications on your phone or computer. But unlike other website blockers, Cold Turkey comes with a dose of discipline. So once you start a block, there's no going back, which I know is important to me because I often am like, I'm just gonna like take off that blocker. It's as simple as that. Cold Turkey makes it impossible for you to give up. Now you can get it for Windows and Mac at getcoldturkey.com or by Googling Cold Turkey. And there's a free version and also a pro version. With the free version, you're able to block websites, but the pro version lets you block apps, games, the whole internet if you'd like. And it comes with a scheduler so you can do things like adding Pomodoro timers and so on. Right now, you can use the coupon code SIDENOTE to get 20% off the pro version, so make sure to check it out at getcoldturkey.com. It honestly helps our show a lot when you check out our sponsors, when you support them, try out their stuff, and that's really what allows us to keep making this. So we appreciate you guys listening, we appreciate you checking out Cold Turkey, and we'll get into the show now. Hello. How's it going? What's new?
Not much. It's Friday. This comes out on a Wednesday, but we're recording on a Friday, so good moods all around.
I don't know if I told you this the other day. I told everyone else in the office, but maybe I had to tell you, I wiped out with Ernie.
What?
Like, I was walking to work and, like, crossing the street and hit a patch of ice.
What?
And just did that, like, whole, like,
did you actually fall?
And then I was, like, falling on him, and he started freaking out because he thought I was, like, trying to play a game or something.
Ernie's our dog, by the way, not, like, our friend.
Yeah, no one is our dog.
Oh, God. Well, there might be a new listener. Yeah. Like, why wouldn't the friend speak English?
So he looked at me and
you?
He was like getting so excited but spooked because I was like falling on top of him and I fully fell.
I haven't fallen this
knees.
Winter.
Oh, because it's been pretty easy, but yeah.
That's what do you mean easy?
I mean, we haven't had a lot of snow. It's been, like, not a bad winter so far.
Yeah, that's true. Thus far. We're only in Jan, and then February, March is the worst living in Toronto. Actually, it's not bad. I like winter, but Mitch last night looked at me, and he was like, we can't keep pretending we like this. I hate my life right now. And I was like, no.
I didn't say I hate my life right now. I was just like, let's stop pretending like winter's like, ever good.
And then I tried to be like, no, it's fun. We're going to go skiing. And then you were like, I hate that you don't just let me hate winter. And I was like, okay, well, I guess you can just hate winter, but I'm trying to be positive.
Summer's so much better. I just, like, can't wait till the summer. Comment
Corner. So this comment for this week, wow, this doesn't make sense. But we're not doing comment this week. We're going to talk about...
We're commenting on a poll that you guys voted on, which was who won the debate last week about breakfast. Should you have it in the morning, or should you eat breakfast, or should you not? And Greg, who won that debate in a landslide?
I drastically lost at the beginning when I looked. It was like I only had 22% of the votes, but at least by like the end of the poll, I was at like 42%.
Interesting. Probably called up all your friends to like vote for you in the poll.
Wait, what? No, I lost, Mitch. What do you
know? No, I know, but you were losing so badly, and then you tweeted it, or you shared it on your own Instagram. Like,
oh,
rude. And
that's
then probably
true.
All your friends were like, okay, I'm going to go vote for Greg.
Okay, I really hope people reacted that passionately and think that I was really upset.
No, it's probably because there was like five votes.
I didn't
votes,
think
so
I lost
vote.
That, but I don't think I'm in for winning these debates because I honestly was like, well, I obviously won the breakfast one. And I didn't. So, anyways, our new Instagram is at SideNotePod, where we're going to post these surveys. So you can go there to like see BTS. Footage, not mm-hmm. the band, although the band. I've been to BTS now, by the way. BTW, I'm into BDS. BTS, not BDSM. Oh my God, I need to continue.
Okay.
But so at Side Note Pod, follow it and vote because that's how we'll actually find out who won. Oh God.
Oh, what did we learn this week?
This week I saw a report that came out that talked about the most effective strategies to deal with things you don't like doing.
Like existing in winter for you.
Yes. / like running or studying or those things that you aren't like trying, you're not intrinsically motivated
cooking,
to do.
Cooking, cleaning,
I mean, for some people,
yourself.
They might like some of these things, but yeah, looking after yourself, living, just existing.
Yeah,
generally.
Is there one in there about living in 2019?
I'm just going to read off some of the, it was the top four strategies they found work most successfully for
to
people.
To do things you don't want to do.
To do things to get through things you don't like. Okay. So, and these might seem obvious, but they studied over like 20 different mechanisms, and these ones actually came out on top, whereas
okay.
other ones
I'm
were
literally
going
to write this down. Go
so,
ahead.
Thinking about the positive consequences of getting to the end was number one. So just in your mind, realizing like, hey, when I clean, I actually will feel good after.
Because yeah.
I'll be like, just think about that's a good way to get through it.
Or in university, I'd be like, if I do 20 minutes of studying, I get a Kit Kat chunky.
Yes. Or like, then I do good on my test.
No, Kit Kat chunky. Continue.
Okay. Monitoring one's goals and progress. So actually keeping track of like, oh, I wanted to, you know, study this much by the end of the day, and here's where I landed. You feel good by tracking where you're actually at.
Okay, I will never do that. That sounds like work. Okay, number
that's,
three.
That's like extra
yeah,
work.
Yeah, like
okay.
doing extra work. Okay.
Thinking that the end is near. So just in your mind, contextualizing.
What, like
no, yeah. Thinking that the end of your life is around the corner. No, thinking that the end of the task is like, you can see it in sight.
But what if it's not? What if it's like a 2-hour
Well, maybe
endeavor.
It's just contextualizing
guess,
it again
yeah,
to be
long.
Like, it's not, you know, even if I have to get through this year doing this thing, like, it's I can see the end. I
okay.
know where the end is, and so I have, like,
that's
perspective
true. Also,
on
even
it.
Also, even me saying that 2-hour task, like, that's not very long, because
right.
an hour is 20, I mean, wow.
okay.
An hour is 24
an
days.
An hour is 20 minutes.
An hour is actually 24 days. I don't know. That's what I learned this week, is that an hour is actually 24 days, and we are... living in an
hell.
Alternative reality.
And finally, emotional regulation. So mentally trying to stay in a good mood. Reminding yourself that if you're in a positive mood, it'll be better.
Thank
and
you, Mitch. Winter is not that bad.
That's true. Okay. Winter's not that bad. No, screw it. Winter's bad. So two other things.
You said four.
I know, those were the things that help. This is the thing that doesn't help. So distracting yourself from the activity was associated with less success.
AKA your phone in Jen's.
Yeah, just like finding other distractions actually
throw your
from
phone
the activity.
Out the frickin' window. Mm-hmm.
And none of this applied if it was related to something you actually wanted to do. So if you intrinsic motivation is by far the best indicator
well,
of success.
Yeah. Okay.
But if this was related to things that you actually like don't want to do.
Okay, yeah, you don't need to monitor your progress of, like, eating a chocolate bar and watching a TV show.
No, but you could have the motivation to, like, learn piano. So you, it's still a hard task, and so relying more on like the intrinsic.
Wow, that was very true to Mitch's life right now, because he's trying to relearn the piano. I can attest to it, and he's doing a very good job.
Thank you. All right, what did you learn this week, Greg?
Okay, so what I learned this week was about NASA. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's an acronym that stands for Don't Even Ask Me, like National Space Agency Space or something. That's NAS. That's NAS. Yes, NAS. Okay, so in July, NASA is going to decide what their next billion-dollar project is going to be, and it's between two missions. And I'm going to explain the missions to you because that's what I learned this week. The first one has a, like, if there are teams competing, the first one has a much better name. It's Dragonfly.
Oh, okay. That is one of my favorite animals.
Okay, listen, I'm not going to say what the second one is yet, but listen to the title of the second one. The Comet Astrobiology Exploration. Can't even read my own writing. Mission. You know what I mean? It's like, obviously Dragonfly has more ring to it.
Yeah.
Okay, so Dragonfly, what it would be is a million-dollar mission to go look for life and chemical reactions on one of Saturn's moons.
Okay.
I don't know. That sounds kind of cool. The other one, which is, again, the separate mission, $1 billion, will they win, the one with the really long bad name, is to study the nucleus of a comet that's billions of years old to give clues into how life started on Earth. Because if they go to that comet and they find that there's, like, nitrogen in those things that they think is what started life on Earth, then likely maybe a comet slammed into Earth and that's how life started. Is that too much, like, information? Like, I don't know if people know. There's, like, theories about why life started on Earth. One is, like, that heat near, like, a literal, like, underwater, like, geyser type thing caused, like, a reaction that made nitrogen start, which is, like, what you need for biology.
Hashtag planet Earth. Or was that the other one? Blue planet.
They have a cool episode on that
where they go down and explain this is where life may have started.
And then another main theory is that a comet actually struck Earth with the chemicals necessary to start life on Earth. That's the one that I personally think I like to believe in. And so if they go and they find this comet that's billions of years old, older than the Earth, then they're like, okay, interesting. This makes sense. This could be the way that life started on Earth. So I think those are cool. I personally want to not do Dragonfly. I want to do the worst named one. I want to go see that comet.
It's like, just change the name of the other one. Like,
I know. If I found out the other one was Dragonfly and I was the team trying to get my $1 billion, I'd be like, okay, I think we need to call ours, like, where did life start?
Yeah.
Anyways, I don't know why we need to go to Saturn's moon. I'm like, whatever.
Rude. That's so rude, Saturn.
Story time.
So today we are talking about tidying up, something that is on everyone's mind right now due to Marie Kondo, someone who I've loved for years, and Mitch ripped on me for loving, but now he's watching the Netflix show, and all of a sudden he's sipping the Kool-Aid. But we'll get to the debate later. First, we are going to tell some stories about tidying up and then splice in the science throughout. So who wants to go first with their
story?
You go first. Yeah. Okay. So my story is, again, about when I was a teacher. Okay, and so there was this thing when I was teaching called Ofsted. Okay, it is an acronym. Again, I don't know the
This is in Toronto?
Oh, sorry, this is in England, is actually important because this is about the English education system, which is whack compared to Toronto's, which I really like, very progressive, Ontario, love it. So there's this thing called Ofsted, which is like this governmental agency that comes into schools to regulate whether the school is good or bad. So they show up randomly, and they go into classes, and they walk around, and they inspect,
and they
just judge you. And your school gets rated on a scale of 1 to 4.
Okay.
4 being the best, 1 being the worst. And if your school gets rated low, parents don't want to send their kids there, and literally, like, schools go out of business. Like,
what?
Like, I was
Do
at
parents
this,
have the choice when you, yeah, like, you can
they,
be like,
I was at a school where it was, like, rated level 3, and then there was, like, a school down the road where, like, ghosts were, and there were no kids, and it was, like, barren, because
it was,
like, rated level 1 by Ofsted 4 years ago.
Oh, 1's bad.
1 is bad. 4 is
like
good.
The best
perfect
you can be. Okay.
Yeah, it's actually called excellent, good, like, not very good, and, like, your kids are going to die here.
Okay.
So, anyways. So, the school that I'm at hasn't had the Ofsted shows up at your school probably once every 3 to 4 years. It hasn't showed up in 4 years. So I get to this school and they're just like, Ofsted's coming at any moment. Like, they're all
how they know?
Because
they
it's been 4 years.
Oh,
like, no
oh,
one they haven't
like
been. They're like, according to
soon.
Yeah.
Okay.
So everyone is freaking out about these regulatory. I just picture, like, people who look kind of like Snape with, like, cloaks, like, busting
walking
in, like,
through.
We're here to see the kids. And we just, like, I was so scared. And so what, like, our department had decided was that if Ofsted shows up, you need to do a distillation experiment with your kids in order to show that, like, we are about science and touching science. Like, it needs to be a hands-on lesson because they
Oh, so it's like on the spot, if you see them, you're changing your day and you're jumping to that kind of activity.
Yeah, they show up in the morning and they stay for 2 days. So that morning, you know Ofsted's there and they're like, this is the practical experiment that everyone will be doing so that if they come in, they are like, our kids touch science. Right. Okay. So the education system in Britain decides to split kids at the grade 7. Kids who do well on this test go to grammar schools, which are like fancier schools. Mm-hmm. Kids who do worse on this test go to state schools where I was. Then they decide to split the kids on behavior. The worst behaved kids get the new teacher. So I am in charge of the worst behaved kids as a new teacher in a school
so smart.
Where in general the people are problem. Okay, these kids are, right? Okay. So also there's a separate stream for the kids that I'm teaching where they don't even do the exams at the end of the year. They're literally being streamlined to like work at grocery stores and they just need to like do a poster about climate change, get a check mark, and then they like get their diploma.
Okay.
So these kids have never touched a Bunsen burner. Because as we talked about earlier, when I put the Bunsen burner on, they burnt each other. Right. They lit things on fire. They literally cannot use a Bunsen burner.
Oh my God.
It's the last frickin' week of school.
Of the whole year?
Of the whole year, and Ofsted shows up.
Oh, my God.
And all the teachers are freaking because that's also the year that you just, like, play movies for your kids, right? Like, the curriculum's done.
Right.
Like, that's when you put on Ice Age, and you're like, kids, like, bring in some snacks. Mm-hmm. So everyone's panicked because, like, they need to show these people that they are really good teachers. But a lot of even the good teachers and the good students have, like, shut off. So everyone is putting on a performance, okay? So it's nearing the end of the day. The first two classes that I have, I actually was like, I'm leaving. Like, I don't know if I can put practicals in front of these kids because they will die. So the first two classes I didn't. No one came in, thank God. The last class I have of the day is like my better class. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do it. So I set up like Bunsen burners, like conical flasks, like the distillation tubes.
Like all around the classroom, you mean?
Like perfectly set up for these kids. Every bench, I spend like hours because I have a break. So when they walk in, they're like, okay, what
the
is
kids?
That? Yeah, like, they walk in out, they're like, I have never seen this pristine glassware, this Bunsen burner, and I was like,
something's up.
I was like, they were like, something's up. But also at that point, too, they're like, oh my God, these teachers are panicked. They know Ofsted's there.
Yeah.
So they all kind of...
they love to kind of fuck with you?
Like, so, okay, this is part of the story. This is, again, a story about tidying up.
Okay.
So they come in, they all stand behind their bench, and they're like smirking, and I'm like, hello, kids. Welcome to your distillation experiment. You've maybe never seen any of these things before, but listen to me carefully, and we're gonna take water out of this salt mixture.
Oh my God.
So we start, I'm like, okay, guys, do the Bunsen burner. And they start doing it, and then I'm walking around, and I literally hear like one like smash. And I like look over, and it's like that little fucker, you know, like the guy, and he like looks at me and smirks,
at you,
and
like...
I'm like, don't, do not. Then I hear like another smash, and I'm like, oh my, and then I lose them. And I am not kidding. It's like broken glass everywhere. Like kids like, oh, my fingers.
No.
But like, I'm like,
are they doing it on purpose or by accident?
Like when you lose control of a class, I don't know how to explain the feeling.
It's like the energy like, just literally like through the class.
Like the like kid who I love is all of a sudden like, my finger hurts. I'm like, I relied on you. And like, there's like the two smart kids who I could just see like looking at me like, you're fucked. You know what I mean?
Oh
like that's
God.
What, you know, it's like pathetic when there's like a 7-year-old looking at you who's like sad
your kids
for you.
Seven?
These kids were grade 7, sorry.
Oh, okay.
But they like there was like young kids looking like at me in the eyes like you're
being
pathetic.
Like yeah,
I'm so
like,
happy I'm
you're
not you.
Failing on behalf of our whole school.
The whole school. And so anyways, so there's like smashing. There's glass. Like it's actually like I was like, if someone walked in here right now, this whole school would fail. Like I was panicking. So this class is divided that there's a lunch in the middle. So they left for lunch and I looked at the class and like the remnants of this like horrible mess. And I was like, Greg, you need to clean this shit up. So I started like sweeping all the glass. Oh, I just hit the mic. Like sweeping all the glass into these like buckets. I was bleeding in my hands because I was like,
why were you using your hands?
Because I was.
It's like rule number one.
I had half an hour to clean this whole classroom so that when they came back, it didn't look like I had that. Like it was
like a murder scene.
It was a trashed lab. So I cleaned it all up. I was bleeding. They come back and then they're like, wait, sir, like half of our materials are gone. Like they have a second half hour. And I was like, I'm crossing my fingers. I'm like, you guys can doodle in your shit. And I just hope to God no one walks in here. And so no one.
Wait. Was someone not there when all that stuff was happening?
No.
Offstead wasn't there. I thought they were there.
No. Oh, my God. Oh. No, sorry. Offstead walks around and randomly chooses classrooms.
So they were at your school?
They were at the school.
But not when the stuff was
breaking.
Not in the
classroom. Oh, my God. You thought someone was watching that whole time? Okay, that takes away the stakes a little bit. I was hoping no one walked into the classroom.
Okay.
But then...
doesn't take away the stakes. That makes it more like you're literally destroying everything in front of them.
Yeah. And someone came upstairs and like near the end of the class and was like, Offstead is speaking with the principals below you. The principal's office was below our class. And they're like, can you keep it down? Because all they can hear is like screaming
glass.
And smashing. And I was like, oh my God. So then anyways, the kids leave. I start crying because it was like the most stressful experience. And then these two other teachers come in to clean up. And the one teacher, like as we were cleaning, just looked at me and they were like, this is so bad. They're like, there's so much broken stuff. Like, this is the worst mess I've ever seen. And I was like, I'm so sorry. It was
like,
the last
I just tried so hard.
Trying. I did
Why
what
did
I was supposed
to
try? Do.
You weren't even going to stay at that school after.
Well, because they were like the best class. I thought they could do it. And then, yeah, I got on the flight, came home a week later, and was, I dream about this all the time. I dream about Offstead all the time. I have nightmares all the time about this, like, Snape walking into my class and me being like, either A, they're just making posters because that's just what I'm told to do and I love them, that's all they can do, or B, smashing glass.
That's my worst nightmare. I could never be a teacher, especially in that environment. I could only be a teacher of like the perfect class. That's how I know you have like so much tolerance for things. Like, I'd be so mad.
It was really funny too. I remember I'd like look at the clock and be like, it's been 5 minutes? Oh really, it's been 5 minutes? Like as if like when you're teaching and things are going wrong, it feels like forever. Like I can't explain to you how that half hour went, like seven.
Wow. Anyways. You're a better person than I am.
Why?
For handling that.
I'm like, what, for making kids bleed?
I mean, for even trying in the first place.
Oh, that's nice. But no, I think a lot of teachers would hear that story and be like, that guy should be fired.
I admire teachers so much. Truly, one of the most important jobs in the world, in my opinion. And it's also an incredibly stressful job. Which had me wondering what other jobs are incredibly stressful.
You look a little stressed.
Oh, I'm stressed.
A study out of China followed over 100,000 participants for 3 to 17 years. They discovered that jobs in the service industry, such as waitress or waiter, is one of the most stressful positions you can have.
Hey, yo, my man, can I borrow some lettuce?
This might surprise you. You might think that a job like a surgeon or a rocket scientist is more stressful. After all, if you mess up while working on the operating table, you could literally kill someone.
Doctor, the patient is desatting.
Dude, he's desatting.
But though jobs like these demand a lot out of the people working them, they often feel a lot of control over their work, and they feel respected. Researchers found that having autonomy over what you do decreases stressful feeling. But in the case of waiting tables, you often have a lot demanded of you, and very little control.
Look, Joanna, people can get a cheeseburger anywhere, okay? They come to Tchotchke's for the atmosphere and the attitude. Okay, that's what the flair's about.
Those who have worked in service know you're often held to the whims of customers and the unrealistic expectations of management.
You have been working a good burger now for like, what, 3 years? And your manager still only pays you $5 an hour, man.
The study found similar results for people who work as nurses. Essentially, the recipe for stress is high demands mixed with low control. The study found that 1 in 4 workers are experiencing these conditions and that it is linked to higher risk of stroke.
I have a memory of a tidying up experience that we had that went terribly wrong, but I'm going to set up the context of a place that we used to live in. So like a few homes ago, I'd say, like we live with roommates for a couple. We live with them for like how long? Like 4 years or something like that in 2 different homes?
Yes. Which home are we talking about?
We're talking about the first home. The first home we moved into. So this was the messier home. We were younger, but also like we would often just like come downstairs and see full-on mice on our counters just jumping around. And, like...
Cockroaches.
One time we were just, like, watching TV and we thought we saw something move on the floor. We turn the lights on and there's just, like, a cockroach running through the middle, which doesn't sound like a big deal, but then we look it up and it would be like, if you see one cockroach out of the walls, that means there's hundreds in the walls.
This is also where Aesop Science was made for 4 years.
This was the beginning of Aesop Science. Like, we had an attic room in this home and we would work from home. But I have this memory of... So, do you remember we used to, like, pay for this thing called Mama Earth, right?
Yeah, it was organic produce.
Yeah, it was basically, like, a company that would... We were like, we're not eating enough vegetables. So every week they would deliver, like, a little package of vegetables to us just so we could make sure we had food and that we were, like, being healthy or whatever.
It's like, sponsor us. Okay, continue.
Yeah, like, hashtag not sponsor. But that... We would often just, like, not finish all the vegetables, right? Like, this is, like, a common problem in our lives. Like, the vegetables go bad, whatever. But in this same house, we had a pantry where we would sometimes keep things. And we would, like, it was, like, it was kind of weird and dingy. But, like, some of our canned goods
sometimes
keep there.
I think that someone recently referred to them. They're, like, it had a cold room.
Oh, a cold room.
And it was, like, it was literally, that's what that was. And I was always, like, this room's so cold. What's the point of it? And it's, like, where you put things that need to be cold. Because it's, like, not insulated.
So, like, I remember at one point there was probably, like, fennel or something in this organic bin that I think we just knew we didn't want. Like, we weren't going to ever put it in the fridge, so we didn't want it. So we had this bin.
Black licorice is fennel, right?
I don't know if it tastes like that. I don't know if they're actually related at all or not.
No, I mean that's the taste that we hate.
I really don't like fennel because it tastes like black licorice. So we just, I think, like, didn't realize, like, we just put this bin into the pantry room and left it. For months.
Years.
Maybe over a year. And then one day we decided, like, oh, spring cleaning. As a whole house, we're going to deal with spring cleaning. And we finally make our way to the pantry. And we're like, oh, there's an empty bin in here. Open it up.
Oh, my God.
It's literally, like, black mush. Not even mush. It's, like, liquefied.
Liquid.
Because also, I don't know if
purple
we would consider
Kool-Aid.
That room as a cold room, because there's a window in that room. So if the sun gets in, and I don't know if that would, like, sometimes heat the container. And we open it. It's, like, this most wretched smell.
Putrid.
Literally oozing. I don't understand how it turned black, but I guess when, like, things break down, it was just, like, compost, basically. And then we were just like, we can never open that again. What do we do with this?
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
And so...
I cannot believe you told this to your granddaughter story.
Well, no, we eventually... Okay, we eventually had to take it and dumped it out in a public garbage because we were like, we literally can't deal with this in our house.
We
threw the whole bin out.
We did it at night.
Yeah, we were like...
With flashlights.
Technically, it's illegal to, like, public dump. Like, you're not allowed to bring your garbage to public places.
Yeah.
So we were like, we don't want to get in trouble, but, like, we don't really know. Our garbage bin wasn't big enough to handle, like, this thing. So we, like,
and we
in
had
the
just,
middle of the night...
And we had to decide what was worse for people who were putting this away. Is it like, do we dump this putrid liquid into
right.
this thing that it smells so bad, or do we leave it in this container?
So it's contained. And we just like...
Which I still to this day think both are
awful. And also... I do actually think it was still in winter because I remember thinking like
it was winter.
If we put it in a garbage outside, it will freeze and then that will actually be a good thing versus us like leaving it in
actually,
our house.
Yeah, actually we did a service.
Really thoughtful. But I remember us like at nighttime being like, okay, we're going to do this. We're just going to do it and no one's going to see us and this is on my mind for years now. I've been guilty about this.
We're so dumb though because it's like now I'm like you go and you get a hose outside. Like I just feel like our worlds were so small.
Well,
I didn't
we didn't
think
have
about
a
that.
Proper backyard. Like we didn't really have like a space.
Our landlord, we didn't have who lived in the basement, maybe had a like. I don't think we thought about things.
Yeah, I think
like
we were honestly just panicked. We were just like, we don't know how to deal with this disgusting thing, and so we did go to a park and just threw the bin out in the park. Please don't fine us.
We, I think you, that's like a, literally a fine. Actually, you know what? Fine us. It'll help your conscience.
Literally. Like signs on parks that say no dumping, maximum fine $5,000.
Okay, well then you
but owe
Toronto
$5,000. So yeah,
Marie Kondo, what do we do in this situation?
Yeah.
Liquefied rotting fennel sounds pretty putrid, and I am glad I have never had to experience that. But is it the worst smell out there? Here is a tiny list. Not an extensive list, but a tiny list of some of the stinkiest smells we know of. Ooh, that smell. Can't you smell that smell? Number one.
Oh my God.
Yeah. What's that smell?
A skunk is pretty stinky, right? You do not want to get sprayed. You do not want your pet, your dog, to be sprayed. But have you heard of the lesser anteater? Also known as the Southern Tamandua. Native to South America, this cutie, actually so cute in my opinion, will release a scent from its anal glands when it is threatened that is 7 times stronger than that of a skunk spray. It will also rub its musk on plants and trees to mark its territory. Number two.
What is that smell? Oh.
The Rafflesia arnoldi, or the stinking corpse lily, is the largest single flower in the world, stretching a meter across. Maybe you have seen pictures of this flower. It's big and red, and its spots look kind of warty. It looks and smells like a rotting animal. It
smells like victory.
This smell is designed to attract a specific type of pollinator, which are known as carrion flies. The word carrion, which means decaying flesh or rotting animals. So yeah, this flower literally smells like rotting flesh. Yum. Last one, number three.
What's that smell? Stinks everywhere.
Your anus. Whoops, sorry, I think I'm pronouncing that wrong. It's Uranus. Yes, Uranus, you know, the 7th planet from the sun. What did you think I meant? Well, it's often the butt of jokes. It so happens that this planet also smells like a butt. Using the Gemini telescope, scientists were able to analyze the reflected sunlight from a region above the planet's visible cloud layer. And by the way it was reflected, they were able to determine that the atmosphere is composed of primarily hydrogen sulfide, a gas that is associated with farts and rotten eggs.
You will find that every heavenly body has its own particular scent.
So there you have it, a small list of bad-smelling things. Let us know using the hashtag SideNotePodcast what is the worst thing you have ever smelled. Curious to know.
Do you smell it? That smell. A kind of smelly smell. A smelly smell that smells... smelly.
We will be right back for the much anticipated debate on tidying up, so stick around. Just wanted to take a quick second, as usual, to thank you guys so much for watching and sharing our podcast. You've been like tweeting us and Instagramming and tagging us. Love it. Just wanted to send a reminder to keep doing that and like our podcast in the apps that you use and download it. Allegedly, the elusive download is important and it helps us, you know, get on the different charts and stuff like that. But ultimately, you sharing our podcast with a friend or family member or your teachers or your colleagues is really awesome and we appreciate it. We love making this and that just kind of makes it all continue on, and we want to continue it forever for you. But thank you so much. We'll get back into the show now.
Debate time.
Today, our debate is about tidying up in relation to Marie Kondo's infamous book, which I've read and
loved. Netflix series that's gone viral across the
viral
world.
The best Netflix series ever, because she just says, okay, you do all the work and leaves.
you know, it's like, it would have been so cheap
smart
to produce that show.
So I am pro tidying up because, again, I'm the one who's read the book and I sipped the Kool-Aid for years, and Mitch is against this sort of notion of tidying up being this
like
cure
for your life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you want me to go first? You got a timer ready?
No.
Okay, I can pop my timer open if that helps. Oh,
pop
sorry. Your
I can pop my timer open. If that
we're
helps.
Not prepared
so.
Today.
I can pop
okay.
my timer.
Ready? You can hit go on that.
And I'm gonna pop the timer.
All right, so
on.
I am arguing that tidying is a waste of your time. Got my notes ready here.
Waste, okay. LOL.
Oh, can
it.
I start?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're actually already
so
started.
Research in 2013, sorry, found that messy places actually stimulate creativity.
What?
So it makes for more fresh insights because, like, people who are really neat tend to play it safe. It's about having everything in order and everything going a certain way. Whereas when you're messy, your mind's more in a space of like, okay, things are a bit more free flowing. They're a bit more like, I'm open to finding new ideas. And so that also links to something where creativity is linked to empathy. And they find that people who are more messy tend to have more empathy. In that same way that if you have rigid thoughts and you want things to be a certain way, you can't necessarily see why other people are different than you. So tidy people are crappier people. Point,
okay,
served.
I was with you until you said that
okay,
really
okay.
brash
but no, okay.
statement.
Let me say it this way then. Neat people tend to be more judgmental, especially when it comes to tidiness. So they tend to look at other people and judge them. But when's the last time you heard a messy person judging a person for being tidy? Never. Interesting. Okay. Neatness.
Okay. Another brash statement.
This is my... a time you're not supposed to be talking. How much time do I have left? Thank you. Neatness is also not
45 seconds.
Natural. So before the 1950s, people didn't care about tidying their homes.
Really?
And it's actually linked to capitalism, your favorite thing, and TV and commercials showing that cleanliness and using clean products is actually like an interesting and important thing for society. And it's just a way to stimulate us to think that being clean is super important.
And like buy more
because
products.
It's like, you know, our dog doesn't like need to be clean. And like historically, obviously we would clean ourselves to a degree, but we didn't tidy necessarily. Neatness drains resources, so it's just a lot of mental energy to do something that doesn't really actually help you in the long
seconds.
Run. People with messy desks actually spend less time looking for things than tidy people do. So ultimately, looking tidy does not actually mean you're organized. Thank you.
Wow, good job in under 2 minutes.
All right. You ready,
that
mister?
That was convincing, actually.
Oh, good.
Especially because deep down, I'm not tidy at all. Okay.
But you did read that book, and you do that, like, that thing where you get rid of your
but
clothes.
But that's pretty
stuff.
Much it. Like, I'm literally, okay. I'm, like, literally disgusting.
You're really setting yourself up to failure before you even started, Greg.
No, because I'm arguing this doesn't mean I love it fully.
Okay.
I love her book.
Are you ready? You can begin your thing now.
Okay, so the first thing I would say about the natural argument, it's like, oh yeah, people were not tidy before the 1950s. It's like, yeah, they were also disgusting and probably smelled awful and probably had a lot more, you know, bacteria going around, probably died earlier, probably got more sick. But let's move on to the Japanese art of tidying up. So when I read this book, I loved it, and it really did, I think, help me mentally to get rid of a bunch of, donate so many clothes that I had, which was an amazing thing. Without this concept of tidying up, I think I would have just, like, continued to gain clothes and objects and things and never even thought about giving them away. I think it's a really important thing that we all learn to do, which is know that we have so much stuff in our consumer culture, and we need to donate it, give it away to free our minds. Okay, and now let's get into the science.
You have
I always do this. Okay. So first, there was a study with a questionnaire that asked people about giving to charity and about whether or not they wanted to eat a chocolate or an apple. And depending on where they did the questionnaire, one group of people did it in a really messy space. One group of people did it in a very clean space. And as you might guess, because of the way I'm arguing, the people in the clean space were more likely to give to charity and more likely to choose the apple. So that's like a very scientific understanding of how being clean can help you, you know, maybe think more positively, etc. I'm not going to say a brash statement here. I'm just going to explain the study.
Okay.
Another study found that women who described their homes as cluttered or full of unfinished projects.
30 seconds.
Oh my God, were more depressed, fatigued, and had higher levels of stress hormone cortisol than women who felt that their homes were restful and restorative. So just even having the concept of your house feeling clean can help you feel less depressed and feel more motivated in your day. Okay, now let's talk about making the bed. And do not come for me because I do not make the bed.
You have
in Mitch
10
does.
Seconds.
People who make their beds every morning are 19% more likely to report having better sleep than people who don't make their beds.
5 seconds.
So actually, that is like Marie Kondo always says, make your bed so you got a better sleep. Okay, let's
okay,
do this.
Okay, time.
How come in your 2 minutes, you're so good? I'm like, I'm always looking. I'm like, oh, he has 45 seconds left. Wow.
Well, like,
he said
I
so much.
Keep an eye on the time because you don't count down my time. So I'm like, I have to make sure I'm going through all the things as quickly as possible. It's interesting that you're fighting for this point, but you've almost literally never made the bed.
I know. Because I'm like, I really think that what I'm trying to say is that when I have had the opportunity and allowed myself, like you said earlier, I think I'm going to remember these things. How do I make myself clean more? You know, think about how good it's going to feel after. Monitor my goals.
Like from earlier.
Whenever I clean, I'm like, oh my gosh, this feels amazing. It's good for my mental health. I feel better. I feel more alert. I feel like happier. And I think that's what she's getting at. And I do think that there is a lot to be said that tidying up is a really, as she would say, magical thing.
Keeping that thing over there. I want to address something that you said. You mentioned something about like being dirty before the 1950s. They're probably disgusting. And I just want to bring up something known as the hygiene hypothesis,
yeah,
where being super clean and hygienic isn't actually always super good for you. So like kids who grow up in like overly sanitized environments tend to have more allergies.
Having a dog is really good because it brings dirt into your house.
Yeah, kids that like grow up on farms tend to have less like not only allergies to animals, but allergies to like, pollen or different like cats and things like that.
But I'm talking about tidying up. I'm not necessarily...
You started your debate talking about that.
I know.
So
I am talking
like
about tidying
up.
I want to stay with that, not cleaning. Okay. Tidying up.
Okay, well, I think that you kind of mentioned having lots of stuff and getting rid of it. I mean, that kind of stuff's in your closet. I don't really see that as like tidying, but
that
I guess...
is exactly what the book says. Okay. Again, it's like read the book. You've just watched the show.
I only watched 2 episodes of it.
Yeah, and then what did you do, Mitch? Oh, you went and reorganized all of your underwear.
It just gave me a really cool folding technique.
I thought you said it did give you a really cool feeling, too, because that's the art of tidying up that we were talking about, the positive energy.
I guess I found that what I liked from it, the way she folded and then put it in the drawers, I was like, oh, that actually does make it easier to see my shirt.
Exactly. And that probably that saves you some time in the morning. It probably makes you feel good when you open your drawer.
But I haven't found out if I'll do it again. Like, I did it once and now I'm almost out of those shirts and we're going to find out, like, well, can I
stain? I'm going to be watching with bated breath to see if you fold those clothes.
Bed.
Okay, I've never made my bed and I love to pick my nose and eat it. But that's, again, dirty, not tidying.
What's wrong with you?
Also, okay, so from a neuroscience perspective, like looking at cluttered things really has a big, strong implementation. Wow, I'm like, why can't I?
It's a big, strong implementation.
But it makes you unable to focus. The more distractions that you have, whether it's on your desk or at your home, like when they actually study your brain, having to look at a lot of things versus having to look at just a few things, it can help you focus. And in your life and in your home, that's a really important thing. To have things all over the place is going to distract you. It's going to make you feel less focused and make you feel stressed. And it's the same. It's like literally what we said today. We're like, okay, after work today, we need to clean our house because we are feeling unhinged because there's stuff everywhere.
I don't disagree with that. Obviously, I'm not fully don't clean. I would say what I'm interested in finding out is, why does this happen as you age? Like, when I was younger, it could not bother me less.
Because I think your mom looked after you.
No, but even in university. Like, once I no longer lived with my family and lived with friends, like, being dirty, having dishes pile up, having clothes everywhere, didn't really faze me. But now, I find... I'm like, oh, I'll feel better if this place is clean.
I think there's an autonomy of your life. I think tidying up is really interesting because it has to be something that you do for yourself. And I think right now you don't live with roommates. I think that can hinder it a lot because you don't want to feel unfair. You don't want to feel like you're tidying up for other people.
Yeah.
And you're trying to keep your own sort of like life organized. And now your life is bigger. You have a home that you want to keep organized. In that day and age, you maybe had a clean bed or a clean desk.
I didn't, though. Like, that's the thing I've noticed. Like, I personally have evolved over time to now actually think cleaning is important to me. Not like I'm not like a hardcore cleaner by any means.
Tidying, sorry.
But cleaning as well. That's another thing I actually will interrupt and bring up is like some people are tidy, but they're not clean.
Yeah.
So that is an interesting point where it's like you actually also have to like clean your floor, clean your counters. Just like putting things to look nice is one thing. But for me, actually, I do like things to be tidy. But
another amazing thing about the tidying up about this book and everything is that we actually have so much crap, especially in North America and our cultures. Like this, the woman who writes this is from Japan. They have a very different way of living. Like they have small spaces.
Yeah, smaller,
things are very organized.
Spaces.
They really take a lot more attention to detail. And there's a lot of power in when you buy something, really understanding, do you love this? Do you actually want this? Or are you consuming this for another reason to fill a void? And I think that's really important thing that North American culture needs because we are... Again, like even to think about climate change, we need to stop consuming. Sorry, I'm just going to hit this thing. We have to move lightly. like I talk with my hands and I'm bashing everything all around me. But we need to figure out how to consume less, and I think it's linked. I think if we can actually learn to love what we consume, really care about those things, get rid of the things we don't want, and keep things small and minimal, then I think it will actually help us to not buy so much crap all the time. Like, I think about Christmas,
think
like stocking stuffers, like all this
interesting
stuff.
Interesting part of, okay, weird that you went after Christmas. But it's interesting that the concept of tidying up is being proposed differently here. Like, most people would consider tidying up when you put things in their place.
Yes,
and
this
you
is
make
about
it look
getting
nice.
Rid of things you don't
it's like
need.
Tidying up your life.
Which is very important. The only thing I will jump to your side about is that in the book, she talks about how your socks... She's like, you need to fold your socks, not like the way we all do.
Not
you need to
them.
Like fold them because it like they've been on your feet all day and they've been hurt and trampled on all day and they need to be put away nicely because think about it, they're gonna get stomped. I'm like, the socks can't feel. So like there's parts of this book where I'm just like, okay, you've gone a little bit too far.
No, but there's something nice about this idea of like taking
caring,
care of your
yeah,
things.
Like treating them like they're living.
Yeah,
like,
I mean not literally treating them like they're living, but for your own sake, being like, I like my things. Like that is a lesson I think you could use because you're like a much
excuse
more
excuse me.
No, you're much more abusive with your things. Like I have a harder time lending you my clothes because I'm like they will come back broken. They will come back stained.
But I also have a lot less things than you if you look into
I
your cupboard.
I don't think that's
I'm
true.
So upset with your inability to Trump. You are like Trump. You just say things that are not true. If you walk in the closet,
that's so rude.
I have Marie Kondo tidied up three times. In my life.
And then you buy.
I don't buy.
Bye.
I love this sweater. I bought this sweater and I wear it all the time. I have three sweaters.
What is your point?
I have three sweaters.
Okay, we're going to go home and we're going to categorize and see.
Yes, and that's the part that I find crazy. I'm like, I look at your side. I'm like, oh my gosh, I lost so much clothes. You have not Marie Kondo tidy up once. And if you did, I know that you have currently probably 20 pairs of pants of which you don't
that
wear
is,
10.
See, you're such an exaggerator.
How many pants do you think you have?
Six.
Oh my God.
I wear
you are Trump. You can't say that.
Okay. What we're going to do for like our social media promo or whatever
this is, side note,
is we're
Instagram.
Literally
we're
going
gonna do this.
To post the behind the scenes and
we
count.
We are going
to
count.
I think I actually have six pairs of pants and then probably like three or four pairs of shorts.
Okay, this is such a lie, and we are going to do that. There's no other... Okay, we need to literally end this here.
You're so angry.
We are taking this
onto
Instagram.
No.
Well, no, because you're lying, and I don't want to pay you.
I can't believe you're so aggressive right now, and you're wrong, and I'm not lying, and you call me Trump, and I'm so mad at you. And we'll deal with this later. But no, I think you do tidy up more in terms of your stuff, but I also think you consume way more than I do. I buy way less frequently than you do. So I do agree. I hold on to things a lot longer. I have that weird like, it's like, is it nostalgic? Like I kind of feel sad even if I don't wear it to get rid of this thing that like represents a time in my life. I have a much harder time letting go of things, but I have more clothes because I don't buy new clothes very often. Like, I keep them.
No,
I have clothes in my closet that are probably over 10 years old.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know that you do.
I have, like, two things because I knew that I love them and I kept them.
Okay. But I think I might have some more stuff than you, but ultimately I consume less than you.
And that is an important thing. When you tidy up, it doesn't mean you just go replace everything and buy new things. But you do have to tidy up and also be okay with the things that you now realize you love.
Okay, so we are in our bedroom right now, and we are going to do a little exploring to see...
We're going to go back in the closet.
We're going in the closet, and we're going to Marie Kondo our stuff, but we're also going to evaluate, like, what's going on in our bedroom. First of all, we're going to count my pants, because Greg said I had 20 pairs of hands.
Okay.
How many did I have, Greg? One.
That's it.
Two, three, four, five. Remember when
That's not true!
Greg, because these are all shorts.
No!
Then I have four pairs.
You Marie Kondo'd recently, did you? Did you give away? You did give away pants, because I took one of your pants.
Yes, so about a month ago, I got rid of three pairs of pants. And Greg
The pants
one.
You're wearing!
Oh, I am wearing a pair of pants right now. So I have six pairs of pants, exactly what I said. I'd like to clarify that Greg called me a Trump liar, and we have the proof. Who's the liar?
God.
Who do you trust now?
I'm Donald Trump. I'm Mike Pence.
Okay, let's count your pants.
Six. I have six.
Okay. So we're literally tied in pants. Huh, interesting.
Wow, that's I feel really bad. But you have so much... Okay, whatever. Now we're doing the piles.
I would say I do have a lot of sweaters, of which I should get rid of a handful.
Okay. Let's do the piles.
Okay. Ooh, those are some piles. Actually, having watched the show, our piles are nowhere.
Our piles are not nearly as bad because we're minimalist, we're queer, and we live in Scandinavian spaces.
Whose pile's bigger?
I'm kidding. We don't do it.
I think yours is bigger because you have all that stuff on the ground.
Wait.
You put that stuff on top of this.
This is not a visual medium. Okay, I'd say they're very similar, but there's a lot of stuff here that I think we can get rid of. So now, what we're going to do is you take each article of clothing and you hold it up. This could help if you've, you know, had a little glass of wine, a little bit emotional, and you decide whether or not it brings you joy. And if it does not bring you joy,
you put it away. Bin to give away.
And the thing is, what happens, and this is what I would say from my experience, is when those things are gone, you don't miss them. Mm-hmm. I can't think of one shirt I ever gave away that I regret because I literally don't remember what they are.
Okay, so we're going through, and this Greg is like whipping through, but I'm finding this really difficult because maybe I'm more sentimental. Like a lot of the things, I'm like, well, I don't necessarily want to wear them, but I have memories associated with them, and like, I don't know, or I don't know.
They spark joy?
But that's like such a weird term that I'm not really identifying with. I'm like, it brings me joy in some ways that this thing exists, but doesn't mean I want to wear it. You know? And I found like an old ASAP Science design shirt that we made that was just like a funny little proton and like being positive. And I was like, I don't want to wear this, but it's cute and I don't want to get rid of it. So I'm feeling weird like about right this. Now, like when we started, I was actually like, I don't know if I can do this. I have a hard time letting things go. I hate this. I feel like I've thrown out so many memories and it's like, I didn't really spend enough time with them to say goodbye, like Marie Kondo said. Like, I was just kind of tossing them, and now I'm realizing, like, I don't really have any clothes left. I've basically thrown out everything. What happens when clothes aren't that important to you, and then you just, like, get rid of them all, and then you're like, I actually don't have any clothes left.
And then you have lots of clothes.
No, I don't have none left, but, like, okay, I actually only have 6 things hanging now, and, like, I just got rid of, like, all my sweaters. I have 3 pairs of pants now. Like, I guess this is fine. Maybe I have to picture it like that it's going to go to other people who can enjoy it.
Yeah.
I know, you're right. I guess I haven't thought of it that way. I've just been like, we're getting rid of it. But it's really sad. But that's good. Other people will love it. Goodbye, clothes. I love you. Okay, we did it. What did we end up with, Greg?
2 garbage bags.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that's compared to the show, I've seen the show, there's been a lot, but I still felt like it was a lot. Like, it's crazy to see it all in piles.
Aren't you excited to get up tomorrow and put on everything that you love? No riffraff.
Yeah, I guess, and to just see, like, a clean closet and stuff, like, feels nice, for sure. So, thanks, Marie Kondo.
Do you feel lifted, or do you feel stressed?
Well, I'm gonna have to see. I feel, like, a bit of both. I feel good, and I feel like, where's all my stuff? But I think as the days go on, I'll feel much better.
You're gonna cry about it. And that's the magic.
Ultimately, yeah, let us know what you guys think. Are you tidy people? Does it impact
your
life significantly?
Are you watching the show? Like, are you doing Marie Kondo's magic? Because it's very popular now. I'm curious.
Yeah, # side note podcast. Let us know, has Marie Kondo worked on your life in the past or now? Are you into it? Will you continue? Or you can tweet us at Mitchell Moffitt or at Whale Watch Me PLZ. Otherwise, let us know what else you want us to debate. What kind of topics are you into? What's in the zeitgeist right now that we can cover? Otherwise, we'll talk to you next week.
Peace.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.